Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the No Silly Cast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever-so-slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, March 11th, 2007, and this is show number 86. Well, I hate to tell all of you that live in cold or wet climates that it is a gorgeous day out here in Southern California. First day of the new daylight savings time. Oh, gee, that was a real fun exercise, wasn't it? But anyway, it's about 75 degrees out, and it was everything I could do to come inside and record the show. For a long time, I just laid outside in the grass and listened to a podcast, looking up at the tree dropping leaves on my freshly washed car. But anyway, suppose it's time to dig in a little bit here. So, did you notice that podfeet.com was down on Sunday? Wasn't that lovely? Gotta tell you, I sure enjoyed it. As you know, I switched from VisiWeb over to GoDaddy because I got sick and tired of my site disappearing. Now it's starting to happen over at GoDaddy. Well, I called them, and unlike VisiWeb, they actually answered the phone, and it was a system-wide issue. I decided to let the guy off the hook right away. I figured that if it's a system-wide issue, my whining isn't going to have any effect on what they do, because they're probably already pulling out all the stops. I think whining is useful when it's just my site that's affected, because it's possible they're not showing the appropriate level of attention to my problem. Well, the site was toast for about 6 hours, but it appears to be back up with snappy performance again. Well, I'm proud to announce that I have 4 mistakes from last week, a personal best. The first is probably the funniest. I misspelled errata on the forum by that name, and no one noticed. I thought something looked funny about it. The second I received in an email from HDA Bob. Here's what he had to say. Allison, I just got done listening to your podcast tonight, and there was an error. First of all, I didn't replace the big van with the element. I still have the big van. Second, the 1991 Accord station wagon was rear-ended and totaled. That's why I got the new element. Well, I did remind him that the step van did get rear-ended too. He had a really bad run for a while there. But of course, I assume he's right about the most recent rear-end accident. Listener Maurice also posted in the errata forums that Leo was right after all last week. Here's what Maurice had to say. Well, in fact, Allison did say songbird.nest about 33.25 minutes into the podcast. It's the second time the URL is mentioned. Well, I just can't win, can I? I thought Podzinger had vindicated me, but I guess it only showed the first time I said it. The final thing I'm surprised no one else pointed out to me, I figured out myself, I forgot to do any Google product reviews last week. After 13 straight weeks, maybe I decided I was done or something? Completely slipped the mind. I'm telling you, growing old is a drag. I got an email from listener Maurice who had several interesting comments. For one thing, he told me that my site renders oddly in Camino. He says, sometimes I get nothing more than a white window with nothing on it, and the next time it will load correctly. No idea why that is. Well, I tested Camino to see what was happening, and it appears to be that the speed of Camino may be affecting the way it displays. When I ran Camino on a bunch of different sites, it was much slower than Firefox or Safari. And as a result, I saw much more of the behind-the-scenes work that a browser has to do to render a page. Podfeet is built by a black background with a white rectangle basically painted on top of that. When I go to Podfeet in Camino, I see the whole page turn black, then the top half of the white rectangle gets painted, but it takes a wee bit longer for the second half to paint white. I don't know if that's exactly what Maurice is seeing, but I think that's the effect that's going on. He also noted that when he's on podfeet.com, his CPU goes nuts. It's just getting hammered. And he suspected the new flash players I had put in place of the QuickTime links I used to have. Well, I had used a cool plugin to do this, but I decided to kill that experiment. I never got a complaint on the QuickTime files, so I think I was doing exactly what I complain about. I went looking for a solution to a non-problem. Listener Bill also sent in a comment about it, too. He said, Allison, you changed something, and now I can't download an MP3 version unless I go to iTunes. He's the guy that told me how much he dislikes iTunes. He said previously, I could right-click on Listen Now and download the MP3 version. Given my dislike of iTunes on Windows, I hope you can revert to the previous version. Well, with that much feedback against it, the good news is I learned how to set it up as Flash and enjoyed that experiment, and then I got rid of it when it became annoying. So we're all back to MP3 files now, so no worries. Last week, I reviewed a very promising image editing application still in beta called ChocoFlop. I wrote to the developer, Santiago, to tell him I was reviewing the tool, and I think I scared him. He wrote back that he didn't think it was ready for a review considering how buggy and primitive it is right now. Heck, it's already better than most delivered products from the big companies. I did have one issue that was intriguing. I noticed that ChocoFlop shifts the color of the image away from red. I took a screen snapshot of the same photo open in three applications at the same time so I could show him the color issues. Santiago asked that I send him the picture so that he could work on the issue, which I thought was very cool. He also said he found my review eye-opening and gave him some new ideas for changes. Feels really good to have an impact in that way, especially since this is already such a cool application. Can't wait to see how the software evolves over time, and I'll be sure to let you know how it progresses. I've been using OS X since before it was released. I think somebody gave me a developer's copy. And yet this week, my buddy Ron told me about something I never knew it could do. You know the services menu that lives under the name of every application? Like, if you're running Firefox, you look down under the name of Firefox, and there's the services menu. Well, when we all first got OS X and we were experimenting around, pushing every button we could find, we got all excited. And so we wandered down to the services menu, but we never reaped any benefits. It seemed for a while that grab in there might be a good way to grab screen snapshots, there's so many other easier ways to get the screenshot that it didn't even pan out. Well, it turns out there's one good thing in that menu. Not sure when they snuck it in there, but it's called Summarize. So picture this. You're over at Bart's blog, and he's written this wonderful article about digital rights management. There's a link in the show notes. But you realize that you have to jet off to work and won't have time to read the whole thing, but you really want to know what he was going to say. What if you could get a quick summary and even tailor the summary to as long as your attention span? That's exactly what the summarize function does. First, select the text you want summarized in any application, and then go to the services summary, and a nice little window pops up with a summary of what you selected. If it's still too long for your attention span, there's a slider at the bottom where you can shorten or lengthen the summary. You can even choose whether to see sentences or paragraphs, another way to tune how much information you end up having to digest. The slider actually goes from 1 to 100%, so if you put it down to 1 and it's on paragraphs, you're going to get one paragraph. If you have it on a 1 for sentences, you get one sentence. Each time you do a summary and keep the summary window open, it adds the new text after a separator, so you could collect a bunch of information together, and you can save it as a file for later reading. It's a very interesting tool, and from what I could tell, comparing Bart's blog to the summary at different levels really does a decent job of picking out the sentences that get to the point of the article. I hope you find this a useful tool, too. Well, let's have a word from our sponsor. As I've mentioned before, HDA Bob dedicates his website to educating us, just because he's a great guy. One of the most important sections on his site is called, What is that leak? You can find that at hdabob.com/whatisthatleak.htm. Now it's a capital W, capital I, capital T, capital L in there, so it might be easier to go over and just click the link in the show notes. Bob says, when you see a spot from where the car was parked overnight, you wonder, what is it? Well, aside from that ugly stain in your garage, you could be letting your engine run out of oil or coolant, or at the worst, brake fluid. You don't need to be a CSI agent to figure out what it is, but you might need to take a close-up look at the leak or the undercarriage of your vehicle, or even feel the suspected substance. After identifying what the leak is, the next step is stopping it. Sometimes the leak is hard to identify. Maybe this will help. Well, from there on, he goes through and explains what each of the different sources could be, and how dangerous they are. From brake fluid to fuel to coolant, power steering fluid, The list goes on and on. He does a great job of telling you what it will feel like and smell like, and whether you should instantly get it fixed, or whether maybe you can take your time with the problem. In some cases, he shows pictures of what it looks like so you can get a really good idea of what you're dealing with. I learned a lot looking at this, and I'll be sure to check it out the next time I find a scary-looking puddle under my car. Check it out at hdabob.com. Well, I still can't believe I forgot to do a Google products review last week. You'd think I'd have felt empty and unfulfilled, wouldn't you? Well, this week I found something that is sort of Google, but not really Google. I know this sounds confusing, but hopefully this will become more clear. As we've been going through all the Google products, one thing that frustrates me is that to get to many of the cool tools, I have to drill down through the menus in Google. Like to get to the Google Labs, I go to Google, then to More, then to Labs, and then I can see all the good stuff. I know I could have a big pile of Google-related bookmarks, which I do, but what if that could be even easier? Well, enter Google X, written by Chikai Ohazama of Google sometime in 2005. Google X works like the regular Google, but you also get a Mac OS X-like dock of Google tools in which to search. Above the normal search field, you'll see a magnifying glass for regular search, a picture frame to search images, some cartoon speech bubbles for Google Groups, a newspaper for news, a shopping bag for frugal, a compass for Google Logo, a diploma to take you to Scholar, a TV for Google Video, and a map for, well, duh, Google Maps. There's also a chemistry flask to get to the labs, and three globby-looking colored balls that get you to more Google products. Each of these icons gets bigger as you hover over it, just like in the Apple dock. In case one is confused about the genesis of this look, at the bottom it says, roses are red, violets are blue. I'll take that over. Roses are red, violets are blue, OS X rocks. Homage to you. I thought that was cool. Well, I started out by saying it's Google, but not really Google. This site was developed by this guy from Google, but it was pulled from Google. I'm not sure I understand this, though, because then someone mirrored it so you can still use it. Google X is at theplaceforitall.com/Google X, and it's fully functional. I put a link in the show notes to Elliot Back's blog where there's a letter from the developer explaining how he developed it and how funny he thinks it is that it's still in use. Pretty interesting article. In any case, whether it's real Google or not, live Google or archive Google or mirrored Google, it's a useful site to get to the Google tools more quickly than ever. Oh, and just to confuse you more, there's also Google X2, which looks exactly like Google X, except the animation of the dock-like icons is really jerky and lame. I didn't put a link to that one in the show notes. Check it out. Check out the good one at theplaceforitall.com/Google X. Well, I'm starting to think that this testing out of new applications, it's kind of like a sickness that I have. I can't seem to stop doing it. I know, you're thinking, whoa, she's just figuring this out? Well, Friday I was driving home from work, and I stopped at a stoplight, and I downloaded and installed a bunch of applications on my BlackBerry. I'm just sick. But anyway, these apps are really cool. I was able to add Google Search, Google Maps, Gmail, Google News, and Google SMS to my BlackBerry. I already had Google Maps before, and it comes with Google Maps and the satellite image option, but now they've added real-time traffic to it. This actually came in handy on Saturday, where I was able to see a nice red line representing the traffic I was stopped in. I couldn't really do anything about it, but somehow it was comforting, and it made me happy to be able to see that. Well, I've enjoyed Google News on the Mac for reading tech news, of course, so having it on the mobile will be fun for long road trips. I don't have any buddies on Google SMS, so that one probably won't be too useful. By the way, I should point out, Google Mobile isn't made just for BlackBerries, but I couldn't find a list of devices it does work on, but I'm pretty sure it works on all kinds of cell phones because they have just a plain old image of a cell phone there. So if this sounds like something you need on your mobile phone, just go over to mobile.google.com and see if it installs. I've done a couple of reviews here on tools that help you create web galleries, and they're great fun. JAlbum is hard to beat for usability, flexibility, and price. It's free. I think it's cross-platform, too. Even though I've got a great solution in JAlbum, I couldn't resist testing out a free universal Mac application called Gallery. Now, Gallery is spelled G-A-L-E-R-I-E, and it's from myriad-online.com. Gallery generates media gallery web pages from iPhoto, Graphic Converter, iView Media Pro, Extensis Portfolio 7, or from any set of pictures and or QuickTime media files. Well, I was thinking tight integration into these tools could make it really useful. I use all of those tools except for I've never heard of Extensis. When you first download Gallery, it gives you two things, the application itself and also the folder of Gallery templates. The README file says to put the templates anywhere you want, but when you launch Gallery, you need to tell it where you put those templates. I guess this makes sense. I have been offended when applications put things in weird places, but that extra flexibility in placement seemed kind of unnecessary to me. Why not just put it somewhere for me and keep track of where it is for me? Gallery's interface is very, very intuitive. I was able to jump in and start playing right off the bat without reading a darn thing. The main screen has most of what you'd want. You name the main page, which is frequently a buried option in tools like this, so you forget to do it and the main page ends up with some goofy name. Well, then you define the maximum size of the thumbnails and the number of rows and columns. You also can give the max size in pixels of the big images on that same page. You can toggle on the title, date, or comments for the thumbnails, and separately you can do that for the pictures themselves. The title is the title of the photo, so if you don't title your photos, this is going to be kind of goofy to have that on. The pages, when you open them, of the full picture of one of the photos is also the name of the photo. So if your photos are named things like DCSN 605 and stuff like this, it might look kind of dorky. Well, the templates are available in a drop-down, or in the Windows menu, you can see thumbnails of how each one of them look. There's about, 15 or so templates, and some of them are really, really beautiful. Some of them they have sort of like, fuzzy outlines, you know, and they've got shadows, and they've done a bunch of stuff with different colors, so that's pretty fun. I like to play around with things like that. The menu where you can see the thumbnails is chock full of fun stuff. Oh, I'm sorry, no, a different menu. It was the Windows menu that was chock full of fun stuff. Under Window, you can see a preview of how the images will look in the web gallery when you're done, and advance through each picture to see if you'll like it before you go to the bother of generating all the HTML. I almost forgot to tell you how to actually tell Gallery what pictures you want to use. That's kind of an important point, isn't it? This is the only part of Gallery that's not super intuitive. There's a little image in the very top of the main screen that has a picture of a baby. It has a zero to the right of it and a big clear button next to it. Well, it turns out you drag images, either from your disk or from an application like iPhoto or iView, onto the little image of the baby. The number changes to represent the number of images you've chosen, and the picture changes to one of your pictures. Well, I suppose my statement about being unintuitive is mitigated by the fact that it actually does say right next to it, you can also drag and drop files or folders onto the icon, kind of like right next to that picture. So, smarter people would have noticed it right away. Well, I tested Gallery by dragging images from the hard disk. I also did it from iPhoto and from iView, and all three worked pretty much the same. I'm a little confused about this integration they mentioned. I told it to use iView, but I'm not sure what it accomplished. There's not suddenly a gallery option over an iView, and dragging from iView is the same as dragging from iPhoto. iPhoto did seem a little slower, but I don't think that's quite the connection we're looking for. I suppose I could read the help file, but you know I won't do that, so just quit your dreaming, okay? It's not going to happen. All right, I've been teasing long enough. Time to hit the Generate Gallery button at the bottom of the main window. Gallery automatically creates the HTML just like you would expect. I put up a silly little gallery of a dog of a friend of ours. His name is Bobo, so you can see how it looks. There's a link in the show notes to Bobo if you want to go over and take a look. Gallery also lets you set up a field to enable visitor feedback on your webpage. So I played around with it and set up a nice little comment box on my on a local copy, but with the proliferation of spam on comments, I decided to forego that on my Bobo page. Gallery lets you publish from within it to your server, which is a pretty standard way of doing it. I don't tend to use that feature in the applications I use because I'm so comfortable with Transmit as my FTP client. I don't see a reason to go into the client, this client, and re-enter the server names and all that nonsense. Well, after you've created your web gallery, you can edit it without having to run the entire generate HTML over again. You can remove images, add more images, and edit comments. It was much quicker to edit the gallery than to start over when I tested it. This feature is pretty advanced beyond some of the other web gallery options I've used, like the one in iView or JAlbum. In this option, if you click on Choose Images to Add, it does launch your image viewer. And in that case, it's the application, iPhoto, iView, or whatever you picked originally. So I think maybe that's what that option of defining your image viewer is for. Well, I'm definitely going to be keeping Gallery around to make web galleries. It's very easy to use, creates beautiful pages, and best of all, it's free from myriad-online.com. I discovered a new video podcatching client this week that might be a good substitution for iTunes. It's called Democracy from getdemocracy.com. I don't have a lot of issues with iTunes. Works pretty well for me most of the time. But I like to keep my eye on what new ideas people come up with, solving problems I didn't know I had. Democracy is a cross-platform tool with versions for Mac OS X, Windows, and Linux, and it's free. Democracy plays an awful lot of formats: QuickTime, WMV, MPEG, AVI, XVID, and more. It allows you to subscribe to any video RSS feed, podcast, or video blog. One of the powers of this over iTunes might be the built-in channel guide, but we'll have to give that a try before we claim that as a victory. Democracy allows you to download and save videos from YouTube, Google Video, Yahoo Video, and other sites, which is really cool. That's something iTunes sure can't do. One of the things that caught my eye with Democracy is that they support high definition and full screen videos. They also support BitTorrent, which means you could download more content more quickly and efficiently than through traditional means. I'll have to test that out sometime too. When I first downloaded Democracy, it couldn't seem to find any of the preloaded feeds, which was annoying, and I almost dropped it right away. But it turns out that in my network preferences, I had proxies on, and Democracy does not support proxies at this time. Once I got that figured out, it was a whole lot more fun. The interface to Democracy is very bold and attractive. It mixes in both the standard Apple gray windowing with bright green and blue banners. When it first comes up, there are five icons in the upper left. You have Channel Guide, Video Search, My Collection, New Videos, and Downloading. Below that, in the left pane, they have pre-populated it with three folders: News and Tech, Entertainment, and High Def. And below that, they give you an example playlist. Each of the folders they included opens up to show three or four podcasts they've chosen for you to get started. Click on any one of these, and the right-hand pane shows you a list of episodes available for download. They do a really good job in this window of showing you information about each episode, allowing you to change the column widths so you can read more or less about the episode. The date is clearly shown along with how big the file is. Remember I mentioned the bright blue and green banners? Well, green means you've downloaded the episode and it's available for viewing. Blue means it's available for download, but you don't actually have it yet. I downloaded an episode of Pixel Perfect with Burt Munroy, which is hosted at revision3.com/pixelperfect. The way to find where an episode came from is to click the little details arrow on an episode, and the description expands to include a direct link to the file. In this expanded view or the normal view, you can see a bright green arrow to play the episode. When you hit play, it opens in the Democracy player. But the real fun is when you hit the full screen window button. It animates by growing to the size of your screen really smoothly. It's a very pleasing video effect. I know it's just eye candy, but I expanded and collapsed it like 5 times because it made me happy. Funny how those things do, right? This Pixel Perfect video was in high definition and it looked fantastic. It was a demonstration of how to create a wooden plaque with a brass nameplate on it in Photoshop, which was pretty cool. I learned a lot. And the guy does a really good job of, sometimes you're looking at him and you can see his expression and he waves his hands a bunch, but then it shows the screen and the actual steps he's going by step by step. So it was very good instruction. Well, while the episode is playing, you get some options there to keep, delete, or star the video. Well, I wasn't sure what star meant. I thought it might say, yeah, this is cool. So I clicked on it, and it launched my browser, and it tried to get me to create a user account at videobomb.com, which is evidently a site that allows you to bomb a video through the Democracy Player. Well, this has to be the worst named website and concept you could ever come up with. Evidently, bomb is a good thing. Now, I don't know about where you live, but where I live, there's two uses of the word bomb. If you say a movie bombed, that meant it did very badly. Then again, if you say it was the bomb, that meant it was really good. I thought this site was going to be meant that I was going to pan the video or say it was really lame, but it turns out it's actually supposed to be like digging it. Well, anyway, as if that weren't bad enough, one thing that bothered me a lot when I looked at Videobomb was that well over half of the videos it had on the front page were sex-related. Not exactly what I was looking for, so I don't think I'll be clicking star in the future. You can also click a share button on the video and email it to a friend. You can post it to Delicious, Dig, or Reddit. Emailing wasn't clear how it worked. I was wondering if it actually sent the video link or the video itself. I sure hope it's just sending a link, since these files are huge. For example, the 12-minute video of making wood in Photoshop was 98 megabytes for that high-definition movie. Down in the bottom left, there's a search field where you can find videos on YouTube, Google Video, and a bunch of other sites. I did a search in YouTube for a video we posted recently of my son Kyle winning the 4x400 relay race in track. I put a link to it in the show notes, as I'm sure you're going to want to go see that. And I was able to find it immediately through Democracy and download it and watch it inside Democracy. Worked perfectly. I really, really like that feature. I should mention one drawback to Democracy over iTunes. It doesn't seem to remember where you were in a video if you hit stop. I was halfway through watching the wood creation in Photoshop when my husband asked me a question. I hit stop, and when I hit play again, the darn thing started over at the beginning. Well, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't the podcaster's fault, because it turns out when we create our files, we have to remember to check the box that says Remember Playback Position. I subscribed to the same podcast in iTunes, and it handled the stop perfectly. It remembered exactly where I was. I sure hope they fix this feature or lack of feature in a future release. This release is 0.9.5.1, so maybe that feature will be available in the 1.0 release. I'll write to the developers and see if they have that on the way. Next, I took a look at the channel guide. It said there are 1,000 channels to choose from. A very iTunes-ish view opened up and took almost as long as the iTunes store to open, not quite that long. It has channels by category, new channels, today's most popular in a search field. Of course, I clicked on technology in the categories. You didn't think I was going to click on sports or politics, did you? The screen only changed one little section to show 4 tech podcasts. It was kind of lame just to see 4, but there was a button to see more technology. And when I hit that, I got 16 on the page and an option to look at, I don't know, 12 or 13 more pages. They really do need to add more filtering here. There are thousands of tech podcasts. So it's great to be able to filter down to the category you're interested in to make the information more available and searchable to the user. I should mention that when Democracy first opens, it offers to bring in all of the movies you have on your computer or just the ones in your movies folder. These movies and the ones you download all become part of My Collections. Think of it as library in iTunes or iPhoto terminology. Creating playlists is identical to iTunes, so I won't go into that in detail. A big difference with democracy is that your videos are not represented by their name, but by a pretty big image of the beginning of the movie. Oddly, the display size of the movie is directly related to the video size of the movie. The high-def and YouTube videos I downloaded were 230 pixels wide, while a video I downloaded from my digital camera was only 100 pixels wide, and an episode of Geek Brief TV I downloaded was just as small. In any case, it's really nice to be able to see the videos this way, because it makes it easier to distinguish which one's which. Syncing with your iPod is obviously not available with Democracy, so that is a downside. But I tend to watch a lot more video on my laptop than I do on my iPod. I like Democracy. The interface is beautiful, intuitive, and the downloads are fast and painless. I give it a definite thumbs up. If they add the ability to return to where you stopped listening, it will be perfect. As a quick aside, I wanted to re-mention a couple of tools I've reviewed recently because they came in very handy during the write-up of the Democracy review. When I realized I wanted to describe the different sizes of the videos, all I did was pop up free rulers from pascal.com/software/freeruler to measure them on the screen. So easy compared to what I would have done before Bart turned me onto this tool. I probably would have done a screen snapshot of the video image, opened it in Photoshop Elements, pulled down to image, image size, resize image, and then read the numbers off the screen. Instead, I popped open free rulers using Quicksilver with a keystroke, slid them over to the image, and read it off the screen. So sweet! The other tool I used in this review was the very beta ChocoFlop from ChocoFlop.com. I wanted to resize an image for the show notes that was too big. See, I had measured it with free rulers to see that it was too big for the site. So I opened up Photoshop Elements. Well, while I was waiting for Photoshop Elements, I thought, you know, I could get out a deck of cards, play a couple of hands of solitaire before it opens. But instead, I decided to launch ChocoFlop. It came up so fast, I was able to resize the image and save it all before Photoshop Elements even opened the image. I'm in love with ChocoFlop. Can't wait until he gets the color part fixed so I can use it with my photographs, too. For now, it's perfect for the screenshots I need to manipulate. My new favorite podcast is Mac Break Weekly with Leo Laporte, Alex Lindsay, Merlin Mann, Scott Bourne, John Foster, and Andy Anatko. The two funniest people on there are definitely Merlin Mann together with Alex Lindsay. These guys sort of talk about some Mac stuff, but constantly they keep going down these rat holes. They go down, all of a sudden they'll be talking about music or talking about games they used to play that have nothing to do with the Mac. Well, they started going down rat holes so often that they actually made up a rat hole song, or maybe it was more of a single chord. Anyway, every once in a while they make it out of the rat hole and actually talk about some actual Mac stuff. They each do a software pick of the week, and this week Scott Bourne told about a great freeware menu bar app called Instant Shot from projects.digitalwaters.net. The problem this application solves is finding yet an even quicker, more flexible way to take screen snapshots. I don't know if this is a big deal for you, but I am always taking screen snapshots. I do a ton of them for the podcast show notes to show you menus or screens that are interesting in a tool. But I also use them to explain things in emails or instant messaging sessions. This is a real example of a picture's worth a thousand words. If you write any kind of documentation, it's so much more powerful if you can have screen snapshots in it so people can really see what you're talking about and follow along on their own application. One thing I also love to do is take screen snapshots of Windows applications, which I can do because I run Parallels to run Windows, so it's actually in my Mac operating system. So I can bring up the right thing I want to see in Windows, then I switch to the Mac OS without bringing any applications up, do the screen snapshot, and I'm good to go for Windows. Well, enough about why we need these tools. The real question is, aren't there enough ways to do this already? Well, Apple has built into OS X some really nice screen snapshot tools, but they require you to remember some pretty bizarre keystrokes. Well, I seem to be able to remember them like some kind of idiot savant, because I can't even remember my best friend's name half the time. Not everyone is so lucky. For some reason, Command Shift Option 4 and Spacebar to capture a window is just second nature to me. Well, I also use SnapZ Pro from AmbrosiaSoftware.com. I'm sorry, AmbrosiaSW.com, which is great for also capturing video of the screen. But it's pretty expensive at nearly $70. And it's great because I get to use Command Shift Option 3 and double click to get a window shot in SnapZ Pro. Again, probably not for everyone. So how about a freeware application that gives you lots of flexibility without having to memorize any commands? That might be the ticket, so that's why Scott Bourne recommends Instant Shot. He said his Aunt Faye uses it, and she's 88 years old, so that's his test for how easy is an application. I downloaded and installed Instant Shot, and it launched in the menu bar with a little scissors icon. The menu for Instant Shot dedicates the first four spots to the main things you want to do with it. You have Shoot Screen, which records the entire screen, and Shoot Rectangle, which defaults to the window you have in front. It lets you know which window you're looking at by putting an orange border around the window. If you want to switch to a different window, you just move over and the orange border moves to any window you hover over. Before I go any further, I want to wander to the preferences because that's what really made me happy with Instant Shot. In the General tab, you can set the path for saving, which is really sweet. Most of these things just glop it all onto your desktop when you're done. But while I'm writing the podcast, I really like them to go into the current week's episode folder. Now, in this application, it makes it really easy to change each week to the folder I want. A lot easier than moving each file I create, that's for sure. In this tab, you can also set the prefix for the name if you want one. They suggest iShot dash and then followed by a number. You can even have it embed the timer date in it by putting in colon D or colon D in the prefix field. Very nice. You can also set the JPEG quality in this tab. Well, have you ever done a screenshot only to realize something really goofy was in the background that got cropped into the image? Instant Shot takes care of that too. In the pull-down menu, you'll see Show Background Window, and this sets the whole background to a single color. You choose the color for the background in the General tab of the Preferences, and you can have it hide either just the wallpaper, if that's distracting, or even hide the whole desktop if you've got icons cluttering it up. My desktop is kind of a mess, so hiding the whole thing is the option I like. I gotta tell you, you don't have to be taking screen snapshots to appreciate it. While I'm recording the podcast right now, I've set the whole background to black, so I have nothing distracting my eyes from what I'm doing. The Advanced tab has a bunch more great options to set. My favorites was to confirm the file name for each capture, because I like to name the pictures as I'm creating them. Otherwise, I'd have to go and do that after the fact and try to look at them and figure out which one's which. I also like the choice to constrain the image width and height to a specific number of pixels. You see, my website can accommodate up to 500 pixels wide before the images start to hang over the edge. So I set the constraint to 500 pixels and ran some tests. And sure enough, it scaled down the images for me without any distortion. Probably need a little bit of sharpening, but that's about it. This means that I won't have to check with free rulers and open them in ChocoFlop to resize them if they're too big while waiting for Photoshop Elements to come up. Oh, I just find new tools every minute, don't I? Well, I should mention that Instant Shot supports multiple shots and timed shots. I'm not sure multiple shots is something I'll need so much, but the idea is that you set it to take a full screen snapshot every 5 seconds or at whatever interval you prefer, and you set that in the preferences. And then I guess you mess around on the desktop and wait for it to take the next shot. I don't think this is something that solves a problem for me, but perhaps you have a use for it. Let me know if you do. I'd be curious why this would be useful. Instant Shot also supports timed images with a default of 5 seconds after you ask for it. That's when it takes a shot of your entire screen. I've definitely needed that before, like when there's something tricky I need to set up before I want to take the shot. You can also do a rectangle shot too with this option. The last tab is for hotkeys. So if you're an idiot savant on the whole hotkey thing, you can set it up to shoot the whole screen, shoot inside a rectangle, and a whole slew of other things using hotkeys. For normal people, you simply pull down on the menu bar app icon and select shoot screen, shoot inside a rectangle, shoot with timer, or start multiple shots. If you have a desire to change the format of your snapshots, you do it right in there too. Pull to the right on any of those four options, and you can change it from the default JPEG format to PNG, TIFF, or even send it to the clipboard, which is often handy. Say you're just going to paste it into an email or an instruction manual. Why keep a copy of the screenshot on your disk? If you forget where your screenshots are going, you can see Reveal, Save Path, and Finder in the menu too. Very handy for those of us with no memory for that kind of thing. Another problem with most screenshot applications is that I have a bad habit of leaving my cursor on the screen when I take the picture. So I have to go back, start the shot, move the cursor, and then do it. While sometimes you do want to be pointing at something, most of the time I don't want that. The default for Instant Shot is that the cursor's image is not included, even if you leave it right smack dab in the middle of the area being snapped. In the Advanced tab of the Preferences, you can choose to add the cursor's image so you have that flexibility. On the System tab, you choose to have Instant Shot start at login, which I clicked right away, because this kind of application is something I'm going to use all day long. I'm going to want it to be already up when I get started. I give Instant Shot from projects.digitalwaters.net a 100% approval rating. I'll definitely be using this tool all the time. Well, it's time to wind up this Daylight Savings Time episode of the NoSilicast. I sure hope you learned something today, or at least heard a mistake, so you can go over to post it on the forums at podfeed.com/forums_bbpress. Shoot me an email if you have any questions or comments at allison@podfeed.com, or better yet, a voice recording at nosilicast@gmail.com. Nice talking to you today, and thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.